Support for this podcast comes from San Francisco International Airport. At SFO, you can discover award-winning flavors and unique shops all before takeoff. Learn more about what's at SFO at flysfo.com.
Hey, it's Avery Trufelman, host of Articles of Interest. And I've got to say, I've been a fan of KQED ever since I was a little kid, and I would come out to San Francisco to visit my grandma. It was just what we'd always turn on every time we got in the car, every time we were making dinner and turning on the radio. It was always KQED. And then over the years, I've become a massive fan of KQED podcasts because this is local reporting at its best. These are answers to questions you've always wanted to know, interviews with exciting, unusual voices, necessary journalism, all told with love and care and artistry. And did you know that a majority of KQED's funding actually comes from members? It's just people like you and me supporting the programs they love, while also getting access to cool events, behind-the-scenes footage, and so much more. If you want to sign up and be a part of this amazing community, visit donate.kqed.org/podcasts to become a member today. That's podcasts with an S. Thank you for listening, and thank you for your support.
From KQED.
This is the California Report. Good morning. I'm Saul Gonzalez in Los Angeles. After reports of people abusing a state access code system that was set up to help vulnerable people of color living in areas hard hit by COVID to schedule vaccination appointments, Governor Gavin Newsom is vowing reforms. The Los Angeles Times first reported that wealthier LA and Bay Area residents who had gotten the access codes were emailing and text messaging them to each other to schedule vaccinations, even though they weren't eligible for the shots because of their age or jobs. LA County Supervisor Hilda Solis was outraged by the revelations.
I am not surprised. I'm disgusted. I am disgusted. And I'm not disgusted at the work that we're doing, but I'm more disgusted about the behavior of people in the public that are not being responsible and actually allowing for those communities that are the hardest hit to be able to stand in line and get their vaccine.
And Governor Newsom says the state will change the code system.
In terms of people getting the codes, we're going to go away from group codes to individual codes, and we're working with the counties on that. We don't like to see those abuses.
In Alameda County, school officials stopped giving out the access codes for fear of their misuse. One 31-year-old man who works in the entertainment industry in L.A. canceled his appointment after learning he had received his access code inappropriately. Now we're going to turn to a person central to the Golden State's fight against the coronavirus. In 2019, Dr. Nadine Burke Harris was sworn in as California's first Surgeon General. She would soon face the coronavirus pandemic and helping to plan the state's response as chair of California's Vaccine Advisory Committee. As an African-American healthcare professional and child advocate, Burke Harris has been especially concerned about the pandemic's toll on communities of color and the state's youngest. I talked to her about California's response to the pandemic and her reflections during a week when the state marked 50,000 COVID deaths.
I think that when we think about the past year, I mean, we have been through an absolutely extraordinary time. This has been really a singular event in American history and in world history. And reflecting on the profound loss of life, the incredible disruption to our day-to-day lives, I mean, it really is akin to what we see in war. But now we are seeing a light at the end of the tunnel. We have increasing supply of vaccines here in California. We've already vaccinated roughly 7.5 million folks in California have received at least a first dose, and more than 1.5 million have received two doses. And so I just want to say that light is there at the end of the tunnel, and we are making our way through this pandemic, and we're doing it together.
And Surgeon General, beyond the mechanics of the vaccination campaign, you've fought against racial inequity in healthcare, and you've championed bringing more attention to children's healthcare, including their mental health and early childhood trauma. Given that, what are some things we should be thinking about more as we fight this pandemic and even look beyond it?
You know, when we look at, for example, the economic impact of the pandemic, we recognize that it has been on our communities broadly, but greatest on our most vulnerable, right? So our hourly wage workers, our restaurant workers, our folks who are, many of whom are really on the front lines, the folks who can't work from home. So we see that combination of the stress and the disruption of the pandemic with also the greater economic hardship. As a result, what we're seeing is increased rates of things like intimate partner violence or substance dependence or parental mental illness, all of which are adverse childhood experiences. And what we know from the science and the data, that can have an impact on children's development, on their mental health, and on their physical health. So what we see is that if we do not put the right supports in place, this pandemic can have a profound and long-lasting impact on the health and well-being of our youngest generation.
You're California's very first Surgeon General, and you took this job before the pandemic struck. Has the fight against COVID changed some fundamental perceptions you've had about healthcare and our relationship with health?
I think one of the biggest ways that it has really just made clear my view, I don't know that it's changed my view, but really around some of the structural determinants of health. We have a novel virus that is has swept across the world. And when we look in California, we see that the death rate among African Americans is twice that as compared to Caucasian Americans. We see that the infection rate among our Latino population is profoundly disproportionate compared to the percentage of the population. And even something, you know, a virus doesn't know your income. Your virus doesn't know what your racial or ethnic background is. The way that we have structured our society has made some individuals profoundly more vulnerable and at greater risk of disease and death. And I think that this pandemic has laid that bare. And that is something that I believe deeply that we have to redouble our efforts to address these social determinants of health, because they are literally a matter of life and death.
All right. On that note, California Surgeon General Dr. Nadine Burke-Harris, thanks so much for joining us on the California Report. It's been a real pleasure talking to you.
Oh, the pleasure is mine. Thank you.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.
Hi there. I'm Randa Abdel-Fattah from Throughline. If you're listening to this podcast, you know that KQED produces exceptional storytelling that keeps you informed, inspired, and entertained. Their podcasts cover issues from your neighborhood to the entire country and everything in between. Support this work today.
You can help us continue to bring quality podcasts to your ears. Just head to donate.kqed.org/podcast. That's donate.kqed.org/podcast.
A national environmental group is suing the Newsom administration over what the group says is the illegal approval of thousands of oil and gas drilling permits in the state. With more, here's KQED's Ted Goldberg.
The Center for Biological Diversity is filing a lawsuit against the California Geological Energy Management Division. The suit, filed today in Alameda County Superior Court, says CalGEM has consistently approved drilling permits without enough environmental review. The group notes that drilling can harm public health in nearby communities, pollute the environment, and lead to serious oil spills. The center wants a judge to stop the agency from issuing such permits unless it studies them more. CalGEM officials have yet to respond to the suit. They recently announced that they granted fewer oil well permits last year than the year before. The center's lawsuit comes a week after two state lawmakers proposed banning several drilling techniques in the coming years. For the California Report, I'm Ted Goldberg.
And staying on energy and the environment, a new audit of California's top climate agency found regulators overstated reductions in the state's greenhouse gas emissions. KQED's Kevin Stark has the details.
In a new report, California's auditor said the state is in danger of failing to meet its 2030 climate goal of reducing greenhouse gases by 40%. A key problem is that emissions from the transportation sector have increased in recent years. The state's Air Board is in charge of implementing climate policy, including managing incentives for electric vehicles to reduce planet-warming gases. But the agency is not gathering enough data about that program and doesn't know how the incentives are impacting Californians' consumer behavior, the report found. The Air Board says it will be making a range of recommendations to improve its climate accounting. For the California Report, I'm Kevin Stark.
And a final energy-related story. Have you ever looked at your utility bill and thought to yourself, this seems awfully darn high? Well, a new report says many utility customers in California pay more, much more, for their power compared to consumers around the nation. The California Report's Lily Jamali has the details. Lily?
Hi, Saul. Well, PG&E, for one, charges 80% more than the national average. SoCal Edison charges 45% more. And San Diego Gas and Electric charges double. That's according to a report by the Energy Institute at Berkeley's Haas School of Business and the nonprofit Next 10. It also found that the state's three investor-owned utilities charge customers two and sometimes as high as three times what it costs to produce and distribute power. This is rates are expected to rise even higher because of costs stemming from wildfires. This week, the utilities are taking questions on their wildfire mitigation plans at the State Public Utilities Commission.
That's the California Report's Lily Jamali. With the death Monday of Lawrence Ferlinghetti at the age of 101, San Francisco has lost a figure synonymous with more than a half century of the city's cultural history. Ferlinghetti was so many things: a poet, publisher, political provocateur, and champion of generations of avant-garde and outsider artists going back to the days of the Beats. In 1953, he also co-founded San Francisco's beloved City Lights bookstore. To learn more about Lawrence Ferlinghetti and his legacy, I talked to KQED arts and culture reporter Chloe Veltman.
There's so much to say, but basically, Lawrence Ferlinghetti is a great icon of the American literary landscape and has a global influence for a number of reasons. I mean, the first thing he did when he came to San Francisco in the early 1950s is that he completely reinvented the way books were made and the way books are sold. The first thing is that he was into publishing paperbacks at a time when hardback books were really, you know, the main thing to do, and the only books that were published in paperbacks were sort of trash books. And he changed that. And he also took a look around and he saw an opportunity to improve bookstores.
When I arrived in San Francisco, there were downtown bookstores that closed at 5 p.m. on Fridays and weren't open on the weekends. So the whole idea of City Lights was to furnish a locus for the literary community.
He got into trouble for publishing the poem Howl by Allen Ginsberg. It had some references to homosexuality in there, and he was arrested in 1957 on these obscenity charges. And eventually, though, the charges were dropped, and that set an important precedent for reduced censorship in the publishing world.
And just remind us about his importance to helping to cultivate the avant-garde art scene in San Francisco going back to the early 1950s.
Sure. Well, in addition to making bookstores very much community hangout places, he also was provided a hub for great up-and-coming literary figures to come and hang out and to share ideas. People like Allen Ginsberg and Jack Kerouac and the Beat Poets. That whole scene bubbled up around Ferlinghetti and the City Lights bookstore, which he opened with Peter Martin in 1953 in North Beach in San Francisco.
Do you think that Ferlinghetti kind of is representative of a kind of San Francisco that's largely vanished, is vanishing?
Well, Lawrence Ferlinghetti is very much a critic of fast, onrushing technological development that's inhuman. He has this word that he uses, he calls it autogeddon, and it's basically a critique of how fast society has changed, and he says, not for the better. I asked him about this when I interviewed him for his 100th birthday nearly 2 years ago, and this is what he had to say about it.
Autogeddon is sweeping the country, and there's no stopping it. Yes, there's things that could be done, but they would be revolutionary, and the United States isn't ready for revolution.
So in many ways, Lawrence Ferlinghetti's vision for what San Francisco ought to be somewhat differs from what it actually is. I mean, here today, we're very much a city that is fueled by the technology industry and all the things that come with that. But, you know, there are still glimmers in San Francisco of this world of Ferlinghetti. It's just much harder to find them today.
All right. That is KQED's Chloe Veltman talking about the passing of San Francisco literary giant Lawrence Ferlinghetti. Chloe, thanks so much.
You're really welcome. Thanks so much, Saul, for having me.
And that is the California Report for Wednesday, February 24th, a production of KQED Public Radio. I'm Saul Gonzalez in Los Angeles. Thanks so much for listening and have a great day.
Support for the California Report comes from Water Heaters Only, specializing in the repair and replacement of water heaters since 1968. Licensed and insured, open 24 hours a day every day. Learn more at waterheatersonly.com. Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose philanthropy includes Schmidt Ocean Institute, working to advance the frontiers of ocean research, sharing the connection between life on land and life at sea with everyone everywhere. And Stanford Medicine, protecting your health and providing dependable care with safe in-person appointments and video visits. StanfordHealthcare.org/adaptingcare.
Hi, I'm Sasha Coca, host of the California Report magazine. Every week, we bring you stories about what connects us in the giant, diverse Golden State. Because what happens in California changes the world.
I love this place. We were once seen as like the place to be, California. The land of milk and honey, that's where you go to Sunshine State, but we just have challenges right now.
KQED's California Report magazine. New episodes drop every Friday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, it's Glenn Washington from Snap Judgment. And if you love what you're hearing, and I know you love what you're hearing, please consider becoming a KQED member. Get special access to cool events, behind-the-scenes footage, and so much more. Plus, you'll sleep better at night knowing you did your part for the community you depend upon. It's in you. Please be in it. Visit donate.kqed.org/podcasts to sign up now. That's podcast with an S. Thanks.